The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Well, what is going on, everybody? Welcome. Welcome, everybody, into the Hump Day Hotline brought to you by
Fikta Endel
and Elmer Eye Care on the Buffalo Rumblings Vidcast Network. My name is Joe Miller, sitting alongside my best friend, Jay Spence the King. Jay Spence, how are you feeling on this Hump Day?
Well, I'm in a good mood because it's Hump Day. But other than that, man, your boys ain't gave me much to be happy about this week. I tell you that much. I'm not in a good mood.
We are going to talk a little bit about it. We're not going to keep everybody. We say this a lot. We're not going to keep everybody long in this show, we think. Going into it,
we know what happens
when you and I get talking. We just get to talking, and it just kind of happens. But so welcome to everybody that is joining us live right now on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Also, welcome to everybody who is joining us in podcast version, audio version, the thousands of you that are going to listen to this show. It's so good to have every single one of you. Please like, please subscribe. We are Super Chat Live on YouTube, so if you want to get our attention and you want to maybe tip us a little bit, that'd be great too. Jump over to YouTube. You can throw a Super Chat in there. It'll light up for us. We'll know that it's you, and we will read your question, your comment, and respond to it. But real quick, from the top, let's hear from our show sponsor, brought to you by John Fina.
Imagine waking up to a world that's as clear as your dreams. With Zeiss Smile technology, this is your reality. At Fikta Endel and Elmer Eye Care, our mission is your vision. Conducted by a team of expert surgeons leveraging leading-edge technology, our procedure is safeguarded, swift, and tailored to your eye care needs. Say goodbye to the limits of glasses or contacts. Embrace a world where your vision keeps pace with your life's aspirations. Contact us today at 800-309-2020 or visit us online at ficta.com. At Fikta Endel and Elmer Eye Care, we are focused on you.
I've heard that read several times, and I've never picked up on the keep up with your life's aspirations.
Just, you know what? It's crazy. He did it in one take too. Like, we jumped in to do it and we recorded it together. And when I'm like, okay, here's the script. And he was like, all right, give me 1 second. And he kind of read it one time in his head, and then he did it out loud. And I was like, that's perfect. I'm so glad we were recording. He was like, yeah, I've done these a couple times in my life. He's so smooth, man.
Dude,
like,
I do them too. And I end up having to, I have to edit them quite a bit. But yeah, it is what it is, but it's so funny. I said to John, on Monday, I was like, bro, so can we do some mystery magic with this, like, Zeiss Smile technology? I think we played yours. I was like, can we make my right eye see, like, all of Josh Allen's action perfectly and magnificently, and then my left eye completely blurry, so I can watch, like, one half with my right eye, and then I can watch the other half with my left eye and can't see anything? And John was like, I think they can do that if you ask them to.
Yeah, I think they can. I don't know why anybody would pay for that, but I think they can do it. I think,
you know what? Bill's Mafia is getting close.
Well, Sarah, she actually got the procedure done with them a couple weeks ago. I don't know how it's gone for her, but I tell you, from my experience, man, I encourage anybody to go and get that doggone surgery. If you can't see, this isn't a huge commercial tonight, but I'm telling you, if you can't see, if you wear contacts, whatever that stuff is, it was the best thing for me. Like, I got tired of like falling asleep watching the game with the contacts in, they would dry, or trying to find your glasses in the morning. Dude, it was the worst. So no, it's the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, my wife had it done several years ago, and I don't have a gag reflex, but I have an aversion to like blood and things like that. Not gore. Like if you're watching a gory movie, it's fine. But like when you're watching just different shows where they're showing somebody have a surgery. So like Beth is really big into like My 600 Pound Life. So like they always show doctor whatever, like cutting stuff off. And I'm like I can't watch this stuff. So, and what's weird is like, I have a super high pain tolerance, like things on my body, I'm fine, but I watched hers cause they give you the screen. So I watched them do hers and it's just a super close up shot of her eyeball, not Ficta endothelium, or we were living in Columbus at the time, but they're like doing stuff. And then they're like actively wiping her eyeball off. And I'm just like, oh, this is too much.
It's like, I can't do it. Well, you know what? That lets me know days that I'm not happy with you, like I'm upset or something, I'll just send you like clips from Dr. Pimple Popper. Ever see that show? Oh my God. I'm gonna make sure to send you the absolute worst, whatever I can find from anytime you make me mad. So just know, if I send you a Dr. Pimple Popper meme, that means you're on my bad side. Just know.
Dude, that one is like, and the hard part about that show, there's an aspect, we're totally off script. This is hysterical.
Way
like,
off script.
Like there's an aspect of like, I get that there's a lot to do mentally with people that are morbidly obese to 600, 700 pounds. And I've got people in my family that are that big. But my heart hurts so much for the people on Dr. Pimple Popper, because those people, that's like growing on their body and there's nothing they can do about it. Like it's disfiguring their face and their head and just different parts of their bodies. Like, and I just think to myself, like literally watching that show, like you can stop drinking a 2 liter of pop every day. You know what I'm saying? Like the other side of it, like that watching that show, if you've never seen it, watch that show. If you're depressed, and you'll realize how lucky you are, like to not have some of the problems that people in this world have. Like my heart breaks for those people. It's just, she squeezes them and it's like,
I love that part. What? But they have intense problems too. So you're right. Like my heart goes out to them. And even for I agree with you, like the people on my 600 pound life, like those, you're right. They can stop doing whatever, but at the same time, it's like even their family members are like, the doctor tells them your mother is an enabler. You know, I love it. The show is perfect. I'm gonna watch an episode after this. After we jump off, I'm going to watch the episode, man. It's on Wednesdays. Love it.
So yeah.
Oh man, I love it.
Sarah Larson's point. Happy hump day, y'all. Like, welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
I'm gonna be honest, this is better than talking about the Bills Eagles, but regardless.
You know what? It made me happy. I tell you that. It just made me happy.
we gotta talk about this football game. So we were off air before we came on, and we did something that we never do, which is actually started accidentally kind of talking about the show. And the reason that we don't really script or talk, like we have outlines and notes and things and topics we want to hit, but we don't discuss it because it removes the energy, like that first release energy that we feel from it. So but I want to kind of get into it. And one of the things that I was talking about as it pertains to just this football game that we've watched, this season that we've watched, this Buffalo Bills season, the Bills are 6-6 going into the bye. I'm not telling anybody listening anything that they don't know, having lost to the Eagles in dramatic fashion. I said to John, because John always says, you know, remember the feeling, but forget the game. And it's like, it's getting to the point where like, I'm remembering all the games. Like how familiar is this feeling and how familiar does it have to become? And when you're listening to just the press conferences, right? And in the press conferences that happened on Monday, it was Monday, I think, right? Heading into the bye, and listening to Sean McDermott talk, and just an aspect of like, you know, well, yeah, but they kicked a 59-yard field goal. He got behind the defense and that's not supposed to happen. Yeah, but he just had a lot of yeah, buts. And it just drove me insane listening to him yeah, but the press on Monday about a loss that he played a huge factor in. And what I was saying to you before the show was just this idea that like, and I don't know how to encapsulate it even still, this philosophical idea, this kind of like, I don't need theoretical idea that there's active blame in football games where players make mistakes. A quarterback throws an interception, a running back fumbles, a running back drops a pass on a wheel route that's a 30-yard pass. It's like perfect, and he like could score a touchdown, and it like negatively affects the game. There's active participants who make mistakes, and then there's inactive participants, guys that aren't in the game that affect the game, like Sean McDermott does a lot. Often
a lot.
And it's like the players can't overcome the mistakes that the inactive participant makes. They can overcome sometimes the stuff that they make because they can maybe do better. James Cook isn't going to drop that pass again. You know what I mean? Like if it happens again, which, you know, Joe Brady said, you know, I have full confidence the next time we run that play and throw it to him, he's going to catch it. Sean is making the same mistakes over and over.
But you know what? Let's talk about James Cook. Let's talk about that. And not even in the sense that probably we would want to talk about him. Yeah, he's a top five running back in the NFL this season. Yeah, it's the best running attack that we've had since LeSean McCoy. Mm-hmm. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I want to talk about here is exactly what you're saying. You're talking about how the team can't overcome inactive participants from losing. I tell you what makes a difference. How about taking out your starting running back when he makes a mistake for a drive or two drive? And I know Joe Brady on this presser this week, he said it was about getting other guys touches. But listen, Sean McDermott has done this with Zach Moss. He's done this with Devin Singletary. He's done it with James Cook. We've seen him do this time and time again where they fumble or they make a mistake. They don't make a play that they're supposed to make and they bench them and they have them out for however long. And then all of a sudden you talk about getting somebody in a rhythm. Then you bring James Cook back in the second half and expect him. And last week he was phenomenal. So I can't complain too much about it, but it's like you bring him in the second half and then he has a, come on, man. Like when are we going to stop acting like this is Pop Warner? Like you're going to put a kid in punishment?
But it's
is
only,
that what we're doing?
But it's only one kid. The only person on this team that ever gets held accountable, and I've said this on my show several times, is James Cook. And before that, it was, as you said, Zach Moss, Devin Singletary. Going back to the Texans playoff game, he missed that pass, dropped that pass, and like was on the bench for the next 10 or 12 plays.
The AFC Championship game.
Right.
The AFC Championship game. He benched Singletary in the championship game.
Right. It's just, I don't understand why he's the only one that gets held accountable. Why does Gabe Davis not get held accountable and have to get benched for 20 plays when he tips a ball into the defender's hand? Why does any, I mean, pick when somebody misses a block, why are they not benched for 20 plays? When one of his defenders misses a tackle, well, there wouldn't be any defenders playing football because this is Sean McDermott. Joe Marino even says this, so I'm not making this crap up. Sean McDermott's defenses are prolific for being bad tackling football teams. Like there wouldn't be anybody playing. I just don't understand, to your point, why the only person held accountable is James Cook. Hey, don't anybody make mistakes or you're going to be like that guy over there who's sitting on the bench. It's like, what is happening right now, right?
It's insane. It's insane. And then the thing that I think that upsets me even more this week is kind of what you're talking about. So you're talking about the presser and you're talking about how, like, why you're watching him and it just drives you crazy. Mm-hmm. And because it's like he's saying stuff and it's like, come on, just stop saying the stuff that you be honest. Like you start to look at him that way. And I go back 3 years and I really did this. I searched my name and I searched Sean McDermott or Coach McDermott in my like with my handle. Last year, a lot, I called him like Coach McDiddy and all that stuff when joking and I felt good. So I searched all of that stuff. There were so many feel good. It was like, it's like the typical, you know, relationship like that goes wrong. Like you starts off and all the tweets are about how much you're in love. And it's like, oh my God, Sean McDermott is so perfect. Oh my God. And now I'm just like, I'm not going to say what I'm feeling because this is a family friendly show, but man,
Called the Hump Day Hotline where we hump the likes. But anyway, I think what's amazing is, and I think you and I have talked about this in the past, just that how fast we went from outliers after 13 seconds, get this guy out of here, it's never going to work, blah, 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 blah. And all of us content creators, insane Bills Mafia, were like, you are not right in the head. And literally how fast that stone has turned for us. And it comes back to what we basically were talking about. Like, it's just too familiar. This idea that the national media is blaming Josh Allen. Peter King came out about it. Was like, this vitriol is what he said about against Josh Allen is ridiculous. Like, I've said it. How many times does Josh Allen have to walk off the field winning the game as a winner and walk to the locker room a loser? Like, and it's not, and sometimes more than once in a game. In the 13 second game, he walked off the field twice as a winner. That's happened. So I just, at what point in time is it changed? And I know you had a great show last night with John Fina, Eric Wood, and Jerry Ostrowski, and they kind of talked you out of this notion that Sean has to go, like be more patient. And then I'm reading on Twitter statistics, and I'm the guy that says stats only matter until they don't. And the statistic that I read on Twitter, don't remember who said it or where it was from, or maybe it was in the comment section, that no head coach and quarterback who had not won a Super Bowl within 5 years has ever won one after 5 years. So if a head coach and a quarterback together don't win one within 5 years, there's no case in the NFL ever where they've won it after that time. And I'm just like, oh.
And I mean, that's a stat for sure. Like
That's a damning
stat. But for me, it's not even that. Like, I mean, we could do it based on history, but for me, I'm doing it strictly just based on the fact that, you know, I look at this thing like we're regressing every year.
We are regressing every year. That's right.
We made it to the AFC Championship game, and now at the moment, we're having a conversation about whether or not we'll even make the playoffs.
15%.
And we did that with the same quarterback. We had the same wide receiver one. We had the same safeties on our team. We had the same cornerback. So there's a lot of pieces, a lot of things that are the same.
Yeah,
we upgraded here or there. We lost some people here. We got injured here. But the core is basically the same.
Yep.
And okay, we're good enough to get back. We have to do this, and then we could beat the Chiefs. Last year, we didn't even get back to the Chiefs. So it's just this notion for me, like all of these conversations that's going on. And you're right. Three legends last night told me, nope, he needs more credit. Don't fire him. And I'm like, okay, you guys are talking me out of it. But then I woke up this morning and I started to think about it some more. And it's just like, I understand why the players on the Stevie Johnson had a great tweet. Great tweet. He was talking about how Sean McDermott embraced Bills Mafia, and he's part of the reason why the team started to embrace Bills Mafia. I don't know if everybody remembers this, but like when Dale Reed first, it wasn't always accepted by the team. They ignored him for some time. Like it,
for sure.
You know, like the whole Bills Mafia thing wasn't accepted. Sean McDermott was a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he changed the culture. Playoff caliber. Cool.
Championship caliber.
Right now, man. It's a what have you done for me lately league. And I'm sorry to say that. I'm sorry to say that over the last half decade, he's been successful. And now for 1 year, he's not. And mm-hmm. I'm ready to move on. But that's how I feel. Because when you have a quarterback like Josh Allen and you understand that Stephon Diggs is not going to be young and elite Stephon Diggs forever. Oh. And you understand that, you know, like once you start to understand like, okay, no, Diggs ain't old yet. He just had a birthday, though.
Yeah.
like it's, you know what I'm saying? It's like he literally just had a birthday.
If they're not in the market for a wide receiver one this year, they are next year for sure. And that means going to get one or drafting one. Like literally Steph Diggs, that cliff for wide receivers is about as sharp as it is for safeties, right? And we're probably seeing some of that with some of the safeties on this team that we love as far as that goes. But you're 100% right. And the hard part for me is there's, you know, Jedediah says it took Peyton Manning 9 years for what it's worth. I don't want it to take 9 years for Josh Allen. Like, and I know that there's things stacked against him. Josh Allen is playing in a conference, right? The AFC with incredible quarterbacks and incredible talent. Like the AFC is so, just seems so strong, so much more strong than the NFC, but the road isn't easy. But yeah, we were chasing the Chiefs. That's who we were trying to chase. And now all of a sudden it's like, we're chasing the Colts, the Browns, and the Steelers. That's who we're chasing. And to me, I think that's the biggest indictment on this head coach and this team. You know, the reality is yes, you've had injuries. However, Linval Joseph is playing well. And while he's not Daquan Jones, that defensive line is playing good, right? I don't think there's been such a sharp drop off on the defensive line that it's that much of a problem. Terrell Bernard, congratulations, you struck gold. Like Terrell Bernard is playing outside of his. I'm the guy that Trish Patel posted the video saying there is no like starting caliber middle linebacker on this football team. Lo and behold, Terrell Bernard is that guy, right? And then when you look at the defensive backfield, the cornerbacks, Rasul Douglas is a legit number one cornerback. Yep. So you can't blame the defense on what's happening. And to me, the greatest indictment on Sean McDermott is if we don't make the playoffs and somehow the Chiefs, or not the Chiefs, sorry, the Steelers, the Browns, and the Colts do. To me, how do you miss the playoffs and a team on their fourth quarterback is going? I know they've got the best defense in the league. Are they playing complimentary football? Probably not, but they're still going, right?
The only thing that I will, in Sean's defense or in the team's defense, because I hear that take off, and you're right in a sense, but then we're not playing against the Browns, or we're not playing against, so like the team that has their third or fourth string quarterback in right now, if the Bills were going head up, matched up against those teams to make the playoffs, all right, then that's a different argument. But when we're like now we're going against the Chiefs, then you got the Cowboys, like we have this is a gauntlet. So, you know, yeah, I think it's like if we can't beat out these teams that don't have their number one quarterback playing, like, I don't know what to tell you. But then when you look at who they have to play and then who we have to play, I don't know. It's a little different.
Yeah, but who we had to play early in the season was a cakewalk. We beat the Broncos. No. We beat the Jets. We're having different conversations today. The conversation about the Eagles game is like, holy smokes, what a great football game. We came out on the wrong side of it, but man, Josh Allen is back. The officiating sucked. There were some challenges with the coaching.
Joe, I'm sorry. I'm going to let you, but damn that it was a great game and we came out on the wrong side. I'm tired of coming out on the wrong side of these all-time great games. The 13 seconds game apparently was one of the greatest playoff games of all time. Guess what? We lost.
How many all-world, like, historical Josh Allen performances have been ruined by the defense giving up in the end? How about the Cardinals game? You remember that freaking ball he threw to Stephon Diggs, that impossible pass to take the lead in Arizona? Like,
and everybody forgets it because of the Hail Mary play. Everybody forgets it. It was one of the most beautiful routes ran by Diggs that I've seen.
But even while he was in the Bills, stupid. Like when he threw
the pass
ball.
Was insane. The pass was insane. And like now you look at this Eagles game, and then you have the national media and even other people within our fan base who have a voice coming out saying, well, Josh threw that interception. He did. But if you watch that game and you came out of that game and you think that Josh Allen was the problem.
No, that defender.
Like something's wrong, bro.
The defender.
And then the
defender broke off his route and snuck into a spot that he wasn't supposed to be in and made it a phenomenal play. He just made a great play.
So. But you're right. But let's just say Josh made a dumb decision there, and it was a typical what most people would like to call sugar high Josh moment. Let's just say it was that. Let's say it was.
Right.
He also is the reason why the team was. He's the reason why the team was scoring anyway.
Right.
Let's talk about it. Let's really talk about it.
Yeah.
If you're talking about this offense without Josh Allen's now. All of a sudden, new freedom to extend plays and scramble a little bit. Before he was able to do that, the Bills weren't even getting those 25-yard receptions on third and four. Like now, it almost – remember how you used to talk about how you just were confident because you just knew. If you saw Josh Allen winding up on a third and 15, you knew it was the first down.
Wide open guy.
The last two games, I felt like that.
Yes.
I felt like that the last two games.
Before that, if it was third and seven, you were like, oh, shit. Right,
like what are we about to do?
39, you know what I mean? Like 39, you're like, just punt it, just punt the ball. We can't make this. But yes, 100%, dude, 100%.
Come on, man. I'm just tired of it. And again, he's not perfect. I talk about Josh when he doesn't play well. Week one, I came down on him hard. People was like, you can't blame. Yes, I can. He was horrible.
I feel like somebody said it today. I don't remember where I was, if it was YouTube, if it was Twitter, if it was the radio. Somewhere I read that like maybe weeks two through whatever, 10 or two through nine were a knee jerk from week one. And I literally felt like like somebody listened to my show, the Overreaction Show, when I was like, maybe it's a bad idea to just let Josh be Josh. Literally, I said on my show week one, is it possible to have the best quarterback in the league and the worst quarterback in the league at the same time? And now I'm just like, what was I thinking? Give me that Josh Allen all day long. And I would rather I would rather live and die with what happened in the Jets game where he gets impatient against a shit crap team like the Jets one time or twice a year and then just obliterates the rest of the field the rest of the way through versus what they did to him from week two to week 10, right? They knew.
I'll tell you what, if anybody also wants to say, now, I'm not going to argue with anybody who feels any way about Sean McDermott on either side of the argument. Ken Dorsey had to go. And
oh, yeah.
You don't think Ken Dorsey was a problem. And I don't mean this to I don't want to kick a man while he's down or anything like that. But now, if you look at it honestly, you take a step back and you look, the offense is completely different. 2 weeks in a row, the offense, it looks like the offense that has Josh Allen as the quarterback.
Yeah, Ken Dorsey, I have inside information that Ken Dorsey is going to be just fine. He's getting offers from college teams, and he's waiting for the right NFL offer. So whether that's QB coach or offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey is going to be fine.
Oh, I'm sure he's going to be fine. I don't have any doubt. I think he's a brilliant offensive mind. I think that, you know, I think the players love him. So I think he's not going to have any issues. I just think that he needs to be with a quarterback that he can mold. Yeah. Josh Allen is not a moldable quarterback at this point of his career. You need to give him the keys and get the hell out the way. Like, yeah, at this point, that's what I want to see, Joe. I'm ready to see when Peyton Manning took that step forward and the offense became his. Yep. When Tom Brady's offense became his, that's what I wanted to see out of Josh Allen now.
100%.
Like, I don't want to see Josh Allen always looking over to the sideline like, well, I don't want that. Right. Josh, make you do it. Do well, it, man. It's you.
A great indictment on that to that point is like it was so predetermined. It was like the ball is supposed to go here. And we watched Josh three times, I think this season, lock onto the receiver where the ball was supposed to go because the matchup was right. Follow him down the field and then throw the ball where you're supposed to. And then a defender just jumped in front of it. And it was like, that's not Josh Allen. Like, we have watched Josh Allen since year two, work through his reads and work through his progressions. And meanwhile, he's like, he's Drew Bledsoeing the whole thing. Do you remember Drew Bledsoe? That's what Drew Bledsoe would do with Peerless Price and Eric Molds. He just watch him run down the field and then he'd throw the football. And it's like, you can't do that. You can't do that in the NFL. And then that ended his career in Buffalo because he would just walk out of those.
Right? You couldn't do it then. And now guys are more athletic. They're faster. They can jump higher. No, you can't. You can't do it.
Just can't do it. So anyways, we probably lived in this space long enough. I do want to bring up the fact that we just played the Eagles. Both of us, without conversation, are wearing green, a version of green. You're wearing the Grinch sweater, which is epic and unbelievable. And I'm wearing this hoodie that I literally got in Ireland. So this came from, for me, the motherland. So, right.
I don't know how many people know this or not, but you know what I mean? My roots are, I'm Irish as well. I'm just going to throw that out there.
We brothers.
Just throw that out there. Hey, it just, you know what I mean?
We brothers.
You know, just saying. And yeah, the Grinch sweater. Yeah, this is my mood. This is my mood right now. Before his heart grew a few times too big, I'm the Grinch right now because of where the Buffalo Bills have me.
Yeah, I like it. It's funny. Matt Bynum says, in fairness to Bledsoe, it worked for like eight games really well. And the funny backstory for me about this is that he's 100% right. And I know it's true because I made a trade for Drew Bledsoe at game like 8 or 9, expecting it to, like, in fantasy football, expecting it, and it just like fell through the floor. And it didn't work out too well for me at all. It just is what it is. So let's do this. Let's transition to, so we talked a little bit about the pressers. Oh, actually, before we do, was there anything else in the pressers that you wanted to talk about? For me, Joe Brady, you know, we got Sean McDermott, the yeah butts. We got Joe Brady, who just basically is a really nice guy, looks a lot like me, very young, skinny version of me with eyebrows. I don't have eyebrows. I do have them. You just can't see them. They're there. They're just, yeah, I'm not Josh Dobbs. Yo. I have eyebrows. They're just invisible. And then Eric Washington to me, and I said this to you before the show, was just like, I'm just going to be stern. And the more stern I am, the more believable I'll be. Like, that's not excellent defense. And there wasn't much from those pressers that I took away as like, oh, like when we come back from the bye, things should be a lot better. Like, I don't know where you were at, just to close this whole conversation.
No, I just walk away from the pressers just still equally as frustrated as I was prior to them. Like, you know, before I watched them, you know, I was frustrated and I was hoping to hear something from Sean McDermott that would have me say, you know what? This team is going to, they're going to be all right. They're going to figure it out after bye or during a bye. And then after, they'll figure it out. And then we're going to go on a run and we're going to shock the world. And nobody wants to see the Buffalo Bills in the playoffs. That's what I wanted to hear. Like that. I didn't get that. I didn't get that at all. From Sean McDermott today, I actually got a coach that he's not as normal. You know, he smiles with the press, with the media. He jokes a little. He's open. Now it's like he rarely even, I don't know, he just doesn't even seem as personable as he was before. And it just seems a little disconnected. It seems like, I don't know. I'm not too thrilled with the communication that we're getting from our leaders right now.
I don't remember who it was. It was a gentleman that is not Bill's beat reporter guy, but it's the guy that was pressing him about what changed. What changed in the last couple of drives? And Sean was like, nothing changed. Which is a bunch of BS because they totally went soft and prevent defense. And they say, oh, I mean, schematically, nothing changed, which to me, and I don't wear a press badge for this reason alone, because if I'm that guy and I'm or if I'm any of the other guys I'm asking what changed, because clearly the play calls defensively were starkly different than they were in the first half of the football game. And this is something I brought up with John. There seems to be a fundamental issue with Sean McDermott's defenses where if the Buffalo Bills are within 3 points or losing, they're suffocating. Like they are a suffocating defense and they will choke you out. Even this version that's missing all pro players. But if the Bills offense gets up 14, if they get up 17 points, they get really super like just soft and like keep everything in like umbrella type defense, which is really, really strange. And Sean in that moment is denying that that's happening. Nothing changed. No, everything was the same. And to me, if I'm that guy, that press guy or somebody else, I'm like, well, what the F happened? Right? Isn't that the next question? The next question when Sean says, like, drives at home, nothing changed, the scheme was the same, the play calls were the same, everything was the same. Well, then what the F happened? It's time to be real. Like, give it to me. What the F happened? Because y'all
and
gave
that's what I'm saying.
30 points in the second half. What happened?
And then for me, okay, you're right. Because and it's not even just the second half. At the end of the third quarter, the beginning of the fourth quarter, they had 14 points.
Mm-hmm.
They had 14 points at the end of the third quarter.
And people are like, yeah, but Josh Allen threw an interception in the fourth quarter. Oh, okay.
Okay, now tell me this.
That's what it was.
I understand how the rules work. I know if he would have gotten a touchdown in overtime, we would have won the game.
Right.
But the last time he walked off the field, the Bills were up by 3.
They were winning.
The Buffalo Bills defense, if you don't go into prevent or if you don't make crazy decisions against a mobile quarterback that just leaves the field wide open for him to run like Moses when he parted the duck. If you just do play defense, man,
am I wrong?
Stop them.
Is my memory wrong? He walked off the field twice with the lead.
Doug.
Right? Did he walk off the field twice with the lead?
Again.
At the end of regulation, they kicked the field goal to tie, right? And then they kneel on the ball. Not the end of regulation. Twice. And then they kneel on the ball for 20 seconds. He walked off the football field twice with the lead. He said, look, I've done it. He mic dropped. I've done it. Just go out there and do your part. Nothing changed.
And y'all gonna blame, and y'all got people blaming Josh Allen.
Right. This is who he is, and what do you expect from Josh Allen? Like, this is he's a turnover machine. Meanwhile,
maybe
Jalen Hurts has the same amount of turnovers as Josh Allen, MVP candidate.
And you know what? Maybe I'm looking at this wrong, Joe, because, you know, the goal for a lot of us that do podcasts and stuff, the goal is to get to like ESPN and FS1 and all those places. Right. So maybe I'm doing it wrong. Maybe I should say crazy stuff that doesn't actually make sense.
Colin Coward.
Or like,
who is it that Colin Coward? Ryan Clark.
No, yeah, like RC. Ryan Clark today. RC. Like the guy. And I love Ryan Clark. Normally, I feel like he's one of the best at a lot. I love Ryan Clark.
Right.
He's not clutch. Josh Allen hasn't done enough to be great. He's a good quarterback, but he hasn't done enough to be great. Ryan, what game are you? Like,
I said that to Marcus Spears. Did you see my tweet to Marcus Spears? Because Marcus Spears said the same thing. And I was like, bro, when you're done reading that clickbait crap on the teleprompter and you go do some research on Josh Allen, like you'll change your opinion.
But it's shocking to me, because again, with Marcus, he's phenomenal, man. Like when Marcus and Dan do their breakdowns and they do all this, yo, I love watching their content. They're phenomenal.
Yeah.
So it's just shocking to hear me, you know, when you go and listen to these guys have these takes about Josh Allen. It's the laziest take that you'll find. And we can move on now. It's a bye week. We don't have a game coming up. You wanted to do some grades and stuff. Let's grade and get out of here, man. Let's grade some stuff. Because it's just annoying. Because it's like, we've been doing this now for a few years. And it's like, the first year that we kind of was on this, it was Wildest Dreams Land, you know? And it's like, you just knew that was the year. You knew we were going to do it. Then the next year, we were just as good. Mm. You talk about last year, we were 13-3.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
I'm just frustrated, man. Like 6-6 might miss the playoffs. The Texans probably will get in before us with a rookie quarterback, he's phenomenal. CJ Stroud, in my opinion, right now is the MVP of the NFL. So I'm not knocking him for anything. But the Texans are going to get in and the Bills aren't. You got the doggone Cleveland Browns and Deshaun Watson is out for the rest of the year.
Steelers.
Steelers with Kenny Pickett.
The Colts with no James Taylor. Or Jonathan Taylor, rather. Colts with no Jonathan Taylor
or quarterback. Their quarterback been out since like week 4, week 5.
No Jonathan Taylor and literally.
No Anthony Richardson.
And on Gardner Minshew and on NFL, whatever the NFL Network does for their show in the evening, they said, yeah, but even with Jonathan Taylor out, they've got a monster in Zach Moss. Zach Moss is a monster. And I'm like, that's funny. That's a guy I remember running into the back of the offensive lineman. He's a monster now.
I don't know what it is about run schemes when guys leave Buffalo, but they do well because Devin Singletary's eating too. Shout out to Matt. He's hating on my man Stroud. He's saying wait until teams has a season full of tape on Stroud. I'm gonna tell you what, Stroud is special, man. Like some of them throws that he's making, it don't matter. He's
a confidence level too. It's cover two. They're gonna at some point in time they're gonna do what they do to all quarterbacks that are having success. They're gonna start running a cover two on them, and then the quarterback will have to figure it out. Which that the only concern that I have about Josh Allen, the only concern, and when you look at guys like Ben Roethlisberger who started his career running, being a little more mobile, not to the level that Josh Allen is. And that was ridiculous when Jim Nance was like, oh, he looks like a young Ben Roethlisberger. I was like, nah, not really. Like, Ben Roethlisberger ran forward and ran over people like John Elway did. Like, Josh is juking guys out of their, like, breaking ankles out there. But regardless of that, there's a moment in Josh's career, and you, I think there was an expectation that this would be that year, that he would learn to be a pocket passer. And I don't, they've reverted back to allowing him to be a runner, which then makes it truly 11 on 11, which changes the defense to open up space. And that's a concern for me, that Josh at year six isn't in a position that, let's say, Pat Mahomes is in, where he can literally not be a threat to run, drop back Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and just pick apart a defense. So there's a hurdle there. There's another level up that Josh Allen has to take.
I'd debate you on that. I would debate you on that.
You've watched it.
Because I think
you've watched it.
No, but I think Josh Allen can be that, because we've seen him be that. Even again, like Sunday, you saw him against the Eagles, and I know that he was mobile, but you also saw him drop back to pass 50 times.
He ran for 80 yards in that game.
Right, but what I'm saying is we've seen Josh Allen pick teams apart in the pocket. You go back to the Miami game.
As a running.
We've seen Josh Allen throw the ball and just have his way. What I'm saying is this season, the only reason why I'm debating it is because I feel like the conversation needs to be had about the offense they tried to install this year. I don't know if Ken Dorsey was trying now to say, this is my thing now and I want to get away from the Brian Daboll offense or what, but I feel like the offense completely was just way too complicated in a bad way. And Josh Allen's smart. I think Josh Allen can absolutely, this season Mahomes runs it. I'm sorry for those listening by podcast.
Hard eye roll. Yeah. Mahomes has not run since he dislocated his kneecap. So
in this season, he was leading Josh in rushing for a while, and it annoyed Joe and I to no end. So it's not that Mahomes runs as much as Josh. Josh hasn't run as much this season.
Right.
And I hate that. But exactly. What I was saying is that the play calling was not good for Josh. We're seeing a lot of the same plays called, but we're seeing them called in different situations, and we're seeing some wrinkles being added in, and that allows Josh to read the defense differently. When Dorsey is telling him, no, this play is the digs, man. Then I think that's when Josh is making those mistakes. Fair. But when we see Josh go through his progressions and we see him read a defense, dude, it was beautiful to watch Sunday. Like, and I'm sure you watched it too. You pay attention to it. You literally, there was a couple plays that you could see Josh literally go one, two, no, back one, no, three. And you could see him go through, and it's just, it's amazing to watch. And that's why I got so upset early, because it's like, y'all are neutering. Like, they neutered him, man. What is going on?
A lot of people don't like Tony Romo. There was one play in particular where Josh worked. He worked to the back and then worked two and three and then worked back to the back. And Romo made a comment that, like, that's almost impossible for a quarterback to do, to go, like, look at the back, go two Romo. And three, and then come all the way back to the back, to the running back. Yes, to your point. Like, yeah, it's a different offense. It's just a small concern. I'm not saying it's a huge concern for me. It's just, there's just a measure of, at some point in time, 32, 33 years old, Josh's legs aren't going to be Josh's legs anymore. And he's going to have to be transitioned into being a Tom Brady or a Ben Roethlisberger, who's going to be able to stand back there and just, like, eat your lunch. Like, I'm just going to throw darts all over the field, because the arm's going to work. The arm's going to work. The legs won't.
Well, I feel you, but I think he can. Like, again, I'm not really concerned about that at all, man. I think that he can. I just think that the play calling wasn't the best for us.
Yeah, I agree. So let's officially transition, and we'll get you guys out of here in about the next 5 minutes. So what I wanted to do was just talk about what?
I'm sorry. You sound like, so I know you have background in ministry and in the church.
Yes,
but
yes.
Like, that was a classic Black Baptist
in
moment. Like, I'm gonna let you out in 5 minutes in closing, but then you, like, literally you'll be sitting there in church like, man, 5 minutes is long when it reaches 30, pastor. Let's go.
Or an hour.
That was classic. But yeah, I'll let you out of here in 5 minutes.
Well, I'm gonna do my best. It's gonna come down to you. I'm gonna blame it on you.
that's a church thing too. I'm gonna do my best.
Hey, I am what I am. It is what it is. I'm a swearing pastor, a swearing bourbon drinking, tequila drinking pastor.
Shout out to us.
So what I wanted to do real quick, just to kind of finish the show up as we're leading into the bye week, was just talk about grades. So grades for the units, offense, defense, special teams. And these don't have to be long-winded definitions. And then effectively offense and defense, maybe a thumbs up, thumbs down surprise player. I thought that might be kind of fun, right? So there's an expectation, just so everybody knows, that we might have a similar player. So whoever goes first, more than likely the other person will pick somebody different, just to kind of make the conversation fun. But I'm going to let you go first on offensive, defensive, and special team grades, and then maybe as you give them just kind of why, right?
Okay. I'm going to go with special teams. I'm going to go with a D.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with a D.
We're going to be driving down the same lane. We're in the car together.
Well, I tell you what, I'll go with a D plus if that throws it off for you, so you can go with your D. I don't know. Pause. But no. They
Hump Day Hotline. It's appropriate.
Hump Day Hotline. But when I tell you how frustrated I've been with the special teams, from penalties on kickoffs or punts to just a bunch of bad things that have happened. Missed field goals from Tyler Bass. I know one was blocked. We can't blame him for a block, but it's just this year has been sloppy. It's been sloppy. 12 men on the field. You got, week one against the Jets, big play in overtime that led to us losing the game. And I can name a few there. So D plus. Defense, considering the injuries, I'm going to go with a B minus.
Yeah.
If I was to take the injuries out and say, you know what, it's part of football, guys get injured, it is what it is, you guys still have to perform, I would probably go with a C minus. I still think that the defense does well. I think the defense have kept the offense in a lot of games that we shouldn't have been in. And and because of that, we are still 6-6. But when you look at games like the Eagles, or you look at those other games like the Broncos, where it seems like in the fourth quarter or overtime, we're just unable to make stops in the most important moments of the game. So yeah. And then offense, for the entire season, if I'm going to include what I've seen with Ken Dorsey, I'm going to, again, be like C minus there. If I'm going to judge the last 2 weeks when it comes to the offense, I'm going to go with an A minus. I really like the direction that the offense is going in.
Agreed.
I think, Josh Allen looks comfortable. I think Joe Brady, I loved even how he took accountability for Josh and for Gabe's miscommunication there. He knows who to blame. He knows who was wrong. He wouldn't say it. I don't necessarily like the coach speak at the moment, but I like Joe Brady. I understand where he's coming from.
Yeah.
I like it. So hopefully we're almost eye to eye with those. But
we are. Special teams is a problem. I'm not even going to regrade because I think your grades are on point. So we can probably stay with a D for special teams. And I think the hard part about that is, and this is where it gets personal, right? Coach Smiley lives in the Frontier School District, and my daughter is friends with his daughter. So there's an aspect of like, you don't want to see the inevitable, and it's only going to add fuel to that fire of, McDermott fires everybody. There's nobody left to blame. Well, if guys aren't, first of all, Dable didn't get fired, neither did Leslie Frazier, but if guys need to be fired, then guys need to be fired. We're now learning that Ken Dorsey needed to be fired for whatever reason, whether it was McDermott having Dorsey do things that he wanted him to do, or Dorsey feeling like he was going to do. We'll never know the truth behind that, but it might get revealed more as Joe Brady continues to be Joe Brady in this offense. It's going to be revealed to us. There's no way, in my opinion, that Ken Dorsey does what Ken Dorsey does for 10 weeks and Josh Allen looks the way that he does, and then Joe Brady gets the last seven weeks and looks completely different. And then it's like, well, that's all Sean McDermott. It's like, well, I don't know at this point. Like, I don't think you can blame all that on Sean McDermott. That might be literally Ken Dorsey saying, we want to preserve our quarterback. We don't want him to run as much. This is my thoughts. These are my plans. This is my vision. And McDermott might have been like, let's try it. Right? So let's try it. And it wasn't
working. That's confusing, though, too, because remember in certain pressers where Sean McDermott, like, I got annoyed with him before when he's like, yeah, no, we wanted to try a different type of offense. So that was on me. Like, when Sean took accountability for that,
I think Sean's
like, what are we doing?
I think Sean's at the point where he doesn't even know what to say anymore. Like, literally, we watched him at the podium in his chair in his office on Monday saying, yeah, but they kicked a 59-yard field goal. Like, yeah, but like, and at the end of the day, anyways, moving on. So the defense, I agree with your comments about the defense completely and the offense. I think it's a two grade system for the offense. I think there's a measure of a two grade. The most baffling thing to me is that complimentary football. And as much as we are done wanting to hear McDermott talk about complimentary football, I've never seen a team not play complimentary football more than this team. When the defense is on fire, the offense sucks ass. When the offense is on fire, the defense can't hold anything for an entire football game. And it's been like that since McDermott got here, right? If the Bills aren't winning by 17, they're in a one-score game, and we're all freaking out because the defense is about to let up on the final drive. I would love to do the research. I don't have the patience for it to find out how many games this defense has let up in Josh. I'd love to know exactly. And Matt Bynum's in the room, and he's the editor in chief for Buffalo Rumblings as far as the writer side. I'd love somebody to do the research to find out exactly how many times Josh Allen walked off the field a winner and walked to the locker room a loser. I would love to know the real number, because I don't think it's five. I think it's way more than that. I think it's a lot.
And I'll tell you what, that other stat that they showed, 0-6 in overtime, to me, I get it. I know Bruce likes to say wins aren't a quarterback stat, so losses technically aren't a quarterback stat. I don't know if I agree or disagree. I think I'm leaning more to disagreeing. Bruce and I can argue about that on Code of Conduct sometime. Yeah. But what I will say is I think that 0-6 record, to me, is more of a reflection on Sean McDermott in overtime. When you're talking overtime, to me, that means – you know, it's strategy at that point. When you're talking overtime, so you lose six times. Come on, man. Six times.
And you look at the losses. But you look at the losses and like, yeah, it's I'm trying to remember some of those losses. So there was the Jets game where it was the opening kickoff, right? But like the Jets drove down the field and scored, right? Josh Allen walked off the field a winner. Jets drove down the field and scored, and then took the opening kickoff back for a touchdown. It's those things. Like, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how to figure it out. I feel like I'm back to the Eagles game. Sean McDermott cannot tell me with a freaking straight face. And it bothers me that nobody pressed Adam Bonini. Like, and I'm not trying to call guys out, but there's some strong personalities in that press room. Like, I know that compared to the New York City press, the LA press, and certain like media groups, that Buffalo is considered a safe place. Like, we don't get into people's faces too much when it comes to coaching and stuff like that. But for Sean McDermott to say that there was no changes, when you look at the first three and out by the Eagles, the defense was aggressive all through the first half, crazy aggressive, like in their faces, challenging everything. And then by the end of the second half, it was like, oh, you want 9 yards? Go ahead, take it. Yeah, there's 9 yards. Oh, you're going to run out of bounds? Yeah, go ahead, run out of bounds. That actually makes it easier for us. So we'll just wait for you to make a mistake. And I just, anyways, different conversation. So I agree with your grades completely. Now, offense, defense. So surprise player, I'll go offense first for me. I'm going to go Ty Johnson. So thumbs up offensive player. So I'll go first, like thumbs up, like surprise player. Then I'll go thumbs down. So offensive player, thumbs up for me. That's a surprise is literally Ty Johnson. And I think I could probably go with like Connor McDermott. Like, there's a lot of guys on that offense that I could probably be surprised about, but I'm excited. Latavius Murray is probably not going to be a Buffalo Bill next year. I'm excited to see James Cook and Ty Johnson. Like, to me, next year, I'm already a little bit salivating for what I'm going to see next year with this offensive line and those two guys. So to me, my first thumbs up surprise player, and it's just been in the last couple of weeks, is Ty Johnson. I'm really excited about this kid.
Yeah, no, I love it. I'm with you. I would have chosen him, but I'm actually going to go with Khalil Shakir.
Yeah,
I think over the last like 3-4 weeks, he's been the thing that we've missed since Cole Beasley.
Yeah.
It's like I talked about earlier when you said, like, you know, you when you see Josh wind up and throw in a 3rd and 15, now that confidence is coming. And three times now over the last couple of weeks, it's been Shakir on the other end of that pass.
Yep.
And he's running routes. He's making big plays in big moments when they're needed. He's been consistent. He doesn't drop passes. I love it. I love it. So for me, Khalil Shakir, I would very much like to see him have another step forward when it comes to how much the team utilizes him for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And the next year, especially if I'm hoping and praying to God that we don't give this man Gabe Davis a ton of money for an extension. Give him Davis's snaps and then draft another wide receiver in the second or first round. Please.
We need a number That's two for asking. Sure. So going to the thumbs down surprise player for me as far as so transit. I love the Shakir pick because I'm the guy that said that I want to see him earn a spot before we just, because all of Bills Mafia was like, if they just gave him a chance. And it's like, well, are you sure? And here he is proving it. He's proving me wrong. And I love that. So I love the Shakir pick. Thumbs down for me. There's a couple different places that I could go. And I'm going to be honest. I'm going to go in a non-traditional or probably non-expected way. And I'm going to say Dawson Knox. Watching Dalton Kincaid execute in this offense and get open and catch the football really, to me, highlights the deficiencies of a $14 million tight end. And it's not a situation where we can be like, yeah, but Dawson's a really great blocker. No, he's not. Like, it's not a situation where, like, that's why they had Lee Smith for so long, because Lee Smith was a tight end that could freaking block. Dawson Knox is not a great blocker. And I just feel like I need to see more from Dawson. And I don't know what the future necessarily holds for the two of them together. But so far this season, I'm excited to have him back. I'm excited to see him healthy. But from what I've seen, and I think my thumbs down is more an indictment on Dawson's last year and this year versus just this year. Like, Dalton Kincaid has shown you that, like, tight ends in this offense can get open, they can make plays, and they can catch the football, right?
Yeah.
So thumbs down for you on offense.
I don't know if mine is much of a surprise, but it's supposed to be. But I'm going Gabe Davis.
That's not a surprise. It doesn't have to be a surprise. You're Ghost Davis, but yes.
If you want me to be surprised about it, in the comments, Matt and Sarah both said Sherfield. I'm agreeing with that as well.
Yeah.
He came here to be an upgrade to Isaiah McKenzie. At this point, you almost got me saying I'd rather have Isaiah McKenzie. And I don't know if people know about – I don't know how much people know me. I don't know how much you listen to the Code of Conduct or how much you watch Hump Day Hotline. But I'm going to tell you, I'm not the biggest Isaiah McKenzie fan. And I'm almost like I'd rather have Isaiah McKenzie than Sherfield on this team.
Yep.
So, but Gabe Davis, he had a wonderful game against the Eagles.
Yeah.
Do it against the Chiefs.
He did
it. And then do it against the Cowboys.
In 3 weeks.
And
ago,
then
right?
do it. Like, just do it. Be consistent, yeah. man. Like, that's my only problem with him. Be consistent.
I think Sherfield, the funniest thing about Sherfield is the play where Josh Allen was going to throw a wide receiver screen to him. So you get the play call, they all break out, and Sherfield is like full on, like 100%, like, I'm here to run block. And he was run blocking on that play, and the ball like sailed behind him. And then he came out of it like, wait, that was to me. And it's like, you don't know the play call? Like, you honestly don't know the play call?
Like, get him out of here, man.
Like, wide receivers, so much of NFL offense is option and choice route based, which is what happened on Gabe Davis and Josh Allen and that last play on offense in overtime, where, like, I got to see what you're seeing. We got to agree, and we got to, like, make – it's all got to come together. A wide receiver screen is a bang-bang play. Wide receiver screen is like, we're calling this play, and – if I don't check out of it, you get the ball. You get the ball. And Sherfield was like, I'm going to block. It's like, what is happening?
I'm going to do something. I'm going to block somebody. I might not catch a ball, but they're going to get blocked.
But it was like, the look on his face inside of his helmet when he was like, wait, that was to me. That was to me.
That was for me. My bad, man. Do it again. I love Sherfield. Like, I love his energy. I just, the production on the field for me, you know, I'm learning now to really be able to separate how much I love a guy versus, all right, I need you to perform on the field. Like, right. I don't care how much I love you.
Yeah, defense. But, so I'll let you go first because I went first on offense. So okay, thumbs up.
We're starting off with the good.
Surprise,
right?
Surprise okay. Thumbs up. And I know where you're going, but surprise thumbs up.
I'm going to go AJ Epenesa.
Oh, that is not where I thought you were going with that. Okay.
I'm going to go AJ Epenesa, man. Like, I was loud during the offseason saying that this dude should be cut. Like, let's move on from him, trade him, get something for him. I don't care if it's a fourth, fifth rounder, get something back for him. Do what you did with Boogie. He has been, honest to God, man. Like, I can't apologize enough to that man. Like, he Yeah, yeah. AJ Epenesa.
That's a great pick. And the obvious pick, Jedediah, where's my cursor? Jedediah just said Bernard. That's the obvious pick. And I was going to go there, and I assumed you were going to go there. I'm really excited to see this kid grow. Yeah. I'm going to go off script, though, just because Bernard is the obvious pick. Lenville Joseph. Mother Trucker gets off the couch 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and is just like...
doing it. He doing it.
It's like, why did we even sign Puna Ford? Why did somebody call Lenville Joseph?
Well, I tell you what, can I skip ahead to my down real quick? Because bring Puna Ford back. Can we get Jordan Phillips and Tim Settle the hell off my football team? Y'all not playing football. Y'all the worst graded PFF players. And you pressing fans. And I don't care what the truth is about that. I said this on Code of Conduct. Be mad at me. Y'all don't got to listen to me. Whatever. I don't care, man. Y'all professional athletes.
Yeah.
I don't care. You can't let you losing the game or whatever's happening get so under your skin that you're going to put your hands on the player. Puna Ford, bring him up, and I'm giving both thumbs down to Tim Settle. And I know you love him, Matt. I know you love Jordan Phillips. I love him too. But ask yourself, what has he done on the field for you lately that makes you say you love him? Yeah. You go show me, if you can show me five good plays, not plays where he jumps up afterwards where he's celebrating, because he's always the one jumping up to celebrate. It makes you think he gets sacks.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's the loudest one on defense after every play. What have you done lately on the field, bro? Matt, you talking about Shaq too, to put hands? Okay, I love Shaq. He's a dog. But if you putting hands on players, we got to stop as Bills fans saying that stuff is okay. We got to just because he's a Bills player don't mean it's okay. I don't care what they said to him. They didn't say anything that should make a professional athlete put his hands on a... We ain't got to talk about that, because I get so tired of seeing all the excuses all week about this.
Well,
we
can talk about it, because there was the action happened. There was an indictment made by the players of what was being said, and video surfaced today of the dude sitting next to him, where he was not saying any of the things that that Jordan Phillips and Shaq Lawson said that he was saying. He literally was just giving him a hard time. He was ribbing him. Which, to me, there's a proverbial, like an invisible wall. Those guys should, like, this isn't new. They should be able to have conversations, do what they do, knowing that they're getting heckled. But yeah, I would expect fines, and I would expect potentially suspension for Shaq Lawson for putting his hands on a fan. But we'll see. And I think the guy, literally, like in that video, he's like, I'm gonna press charges. Like, he put his hands on me. That's assault. And as much as he didn't hurt him, it might happen. Assault. It's assault.
Like, and the thing is. But the thing is, it's like, then we'll turn around as Bills fans and make every excuse in the book. I don't care what the guy said to him.
Yep.
Do you know how much ignorant shit is said to me on a day-to-day basis?
For sure.
You know how much ignorant shit is said to me when I come to Buffalo and go to a football game?
Right.
Like, in the tailgate, I get racist shit said to me, and I'm part of the fan base.
Yeah.
I get dumb stuff said to me on Twitter every day.
Yeah.
People talk so much. People talk out their necks so much. Yeah. You are a professional athlete that gets paid millions of dollars to play a game that we enjoy watching. You get paid millions of dollars to do this. And you can't be professional? Bro, if you knew the salary I got from Buffalo Rumblings and I still hold my peace with a lot of this crap, you would think that I was a saint, man. And you mean to tell me for millions of dollars and to not get suspended or to not get fined, you can't represent your team a certain way? Come on, man. Like, that's foolish and it's childish. 100%. Kids fight like that. Kids do foolish stuff. We got to go. Jerry and Sarah are coming up online again. My bad. I just looked at the time.
My thumbs down is Taron Johnson. Taron Johnson's been targeted too much, and I don't understand why. We love you guys for all of Bills Mafia for us. Go hang out with them. Yes. Love you guys. Go Bills.